science.
Well, it is Science Week, which is a wonderful thing, but humble brag. Thursday is always Science Day here on Drive. Our guest this evening, research filterer, is Dr. Merin McKinnon from the Australian National Centre for the Public Awareness of Science. Merin, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Merin, it's not like the mainstream media to dig up a story from, 3 years ago and present it as news. However, tell me about this shark that's older than Shakespeare.
This is going to take just a little bit of explaining.
Okay.
So this is the Greenland shark, which is the largest fish in the Arctic. It can grow up to 7 metres, but it grows at less than 1 centimetre per year. So it's very, very slow to grow. So there's very little that's known about it. And this study, which was done in 2016, looked at 28 females from this species. So the way they figure out the age of these sharks is to use radiocarbon dating. So radiocarbon's constantly being made in the atmosphere. It combines with oxygen to make radioactive carbon dioxide, which is incorporated into plants through photosynthesis. Animals eat the plants, animals eat the animals. And when those plants and animals die, the amount of carbon in them starts to degrade. And so we can use this as an estimate of how old something is. This is really hard to do in the Greenland shark because you need something solid, like a calcified vertebra from the spine or something. Mm. These sharks don't have that. So the only thing that they can use is the eye lens nucleus. So this is in prenatal development, it's formed.
Good Lord.
And the tissue retains proteins that exist from about age zero. So it's kind of the blank slate. So what they've managed to do is to look at the eye lens nucleus and use the carbon that remains in there to evaluate how old these sharks are. And they have a marker, which humans actually created in the mid-1950s, when we were doing all of these atmospheric tests of thermonuclear weapons. So all of that fallout ended up in the marine ecosystem, and the mothers of these sharks, as well as the other sharks that were already in there, ate food that was affected by this thermonuclear fallout. So there's a bomb pulse, which gives us a really distinct time period of 1960s.
How does that help us with Shakespeare?
That was well after Shakespeare. It's true. So out of these 28, they have found 3 sharks that were around that 1960s or a little bit younger, but the rest had levels which showed that they were distinctly older. So they used a lot of models, a lot of statistics, compared measurements, other known knowns, and they figured out that there's an age range of probability that these species are. And it's between 272 to 512 years old.
Wow.
So 512, that's where the bard comes in.
Wow. I'm sorry. Wow. I'm impressed on 2 counts. One, that of a superb creature that can live for so long and what it must have seen. But also that we live in a world in which Greenland sharks can be carbon dated using their eye lens nucleus thing.
We can do it to humans too, which is...
I'm very impressed by that.
Yeah.
Why is this being, however, passed off as a news story this week?
I would love to tell you. I've had a look. The researchers have released another paper, but that was back in April. Might have been a symposium. The origin seems to be the Sun in the UK, so I have no idea.
Okay, say no more. Well, a wonderful story to hear about anyway. Here's another research from Japan, this is strangely topical and resonant of another conversation, but it might allow us to choose the gender of our children.
Yeah, so this is research that's come from Japan, as you say, and the authors have found, typically when we do have, when we look at our rate of offspring, we have 50% males, 50% females. Mm-hmm. So what these researchers have done, if there's identified that there are about 500 genes that are active only in X-bearing chromosome, or the X-bearing sperm rather, and in that 18 genes have receptors, which we can actually use to manipulate the sperm's responses to certain, or the gene's responses to certain stimuli.
Right.
So they have this pair of receptors which they applied a chemical to. And what that chemical did was it could slow down how quickly the sperm moved without impairing the ability of the sperm to fertilize the egg or how viable it was. So essentially it applied a brake. And what they found was the faster swimmers, when they were allowed to go, that led to litters that were 90% male. This is in mice, not humans, obviously. And when the slower swimmers were used, the litters were 81% female.
Okay, mice, yes. Humans?
Oh, ethical issues. So, I mean, it's purely speculative. We have been able to do this in things like pigs and cattle, but pigs, cattle and mice, they are still very different when you're looking at a genetic level, the parts that count to humans. And even that, notwithstanding all of the ethical issues surrounding that, really.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Fair point. Now, this last one, we're quickly running out of time, but the central point here seems to be that women are not better taskers. They're just doing more, better multitaskers. They're just doing more work.
Yeah, pretty much. That sums it up.
Yep. Okay. That's good research. I think we could all probably see where that might be headed, but it's an interesting study comparing 48 men, 48 women. It's not a big sample, but effective.
It is effective. It does echo other findings, which is we tend to overestimate our ability to multitask. Like try writing an email and talking on the phone at the same time. You're not actually doing both simultaneously. You're just flicking between the two really, really quickly.
That is an interesting point. Indeed, we are. Meryn, thank you so very much.
Pleasure.